This episode contains references to animals that may upset some listeners. If you've been affected by any issues raised in this week's episode, please contact your local crisis centre.
Ding, 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 ding! Trigger warning! Three. Michelle! Help me, Michelle!
Oh my god, are you talking to dead people? Is that what you've been doing since I chatted to you?
No, I didn't try and talk to any... Did you? Did you try and talk to a dead person?
No. Only Andreas. No.
He doesn't listen, so we can say what the hell we like about your partner.
Well, speaking of Andreas, I did chat to him after last week's episode, and I said to him, oh yeah, you know, I mentioned about how Swedish people go to graveyards all the time, and he was like, well, I think it might just be my dad and maybe just my family.
Michelle, I had a feeling as you were telling that story, but I didn't want to burst your little bubble. I thought, oh, I wonder if that's just something that that family does. All these Swedes saying, we don't always hang out every week in this
in a cemetery. But you know what? It was more that every time we went, that fucking car park is full. It's not all just his family. No, I don't know what it is. But yeah, it's I just thought it was a lot of Swedish people love to like chit chat with
hanging
dead.
Out in the cemetery.
Yeah. But anyway, apologies to Swedish people if I have absolutely just lumped your entire culture in.
Do you
with
know what?
My
Michelle, while we're
family.
At it, while we're at it, why don't we just apologize to the entire world? All nations, we apologize.
Yeah, it's true. And actually, do you know what? I did listen back and I did have a giggle when you said, aggedy aunt.
Raggedy, aggedy aunt.
The aggedy aunt. God knows what his name was.
I get excited. He was the agony aunt for Let's Take a Break magazine's spiritual
That's
section.
Right.
He was the psychic, Gordon the psychic baker?
Oh, fucking hell,
really? He wasn't a real estate because we've got a psychic real estate agent. Thank you, Hazel.
Yes. She's gone a bit quiet. She's gone a bit off radar.
Very busy. I've seen her Facebook. She is hither and thither at the moment. She's having a ball.
Good for her. Yeah. Sorry, I was just swigging my rum. Cup of green tea. Oh. No, I've got the rum there for later. Okay.
Well, I'm on the London Nootropic. Thanks for the little mention, London Nootropics. This is my mushroom.
Oh, your mushroom coffee.
Yes, sorry. I forgot what I was even drinking. I was that high.
Do you know what? You were showing it to me and I was
it's
like.
It's a cup.
It's a cup
full of mushroom coffee, adaptogenic herbs and psychotropic mushrooms.
What does it actually do? How do you feel?
High as a fucking kite.
Oh, really?
I'm joking. It's just a bit of ground up coffee with some nice herbal things stuck in there. And mushrooms are the new superfood.
Oh, I think they've been around for a while, but maybe it's a fancy mushroom. I don't know.
What have I got in this one? Cordyceps and lion's mane.
Blimey.
All right. They do different things.
How's it taste?
Good. It took a little while to get used to because also when I started drinking these, I'd gone off cow's milk or moo juice, as you might have called
moo juice.
It. So it's all frothy cashew milk in here. It's delicious. You get used to it. I did have a real coffee with moo juice yesterday and that was good too.
But if you didn't think of it as coffee and you just thought of it as a hot beverage, would you?
Yes, love it.
Would you recommend?
I have about three a day, so yeah, I recommend. So, Moosh, I had a funny thing happen to me last week.
Oh, Jesus, what happened?
Well, my neighbour, who's an avid listener, I'll just say a shout out to Laura. Here we are, Laura. We've got finally acknowledging your presence. She was walking past our driveway last week with her daughter, and there was another driveway nearby, and they're selling their house and they're getting rid of a whole heap of shit, right? All sorts of crazy crap, obviously like really old, so old you wouldn't even want it, not even good stuff, you know, out the front of their house. And I think they'd walked past and seen a massive great big jar that was full of a dark murky liquid like the bottom of a pond, and it had sticks and apples and pears. Well, they said to each other with a laugh, who'd want that? Ha ha ha. Why are they giving that away? The next time they saw it, it was on my driveway because my husband had seen that and thought, oh, that's interesting. So,
oh my God.
She told me. And I was like, what? Oh my God. I've just got him to clear our driveway. We're a very focal point in our neighborhood. Everybody walks past our house and you can see what's going on. And he finds things in the skip next door. He's even taken things out of our own skip when we had some work done. He's actually salvaged from our own skip. So anyway, now we've got this great big murky liquid thing on the driveway. And my friend came around and she said, what's in it? She said, did you taste? Do you know what's in it? He said, I tasted it. And we were all aghast. No. We said, what did it taste like? Thinking it was a weird pickle. He said, pond water.
No.
It is actually just a jar of pond water. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
With rotten apples and pears. He's still alive, thank God.
Jesus Christ. Who would want to take a risk and have a little taste of that? I'll be terrified.
My guy.
Your husband.
So the same week I was coming home and I found a little like tufty head, kind of like Father Jack from Father Ted. Do you remember? Feckin' girls. That one.
Okay.
He was standing on my driveway. He also had some goodies from that person's house. He had a couple of pots.
From the hall. He had a bit of a haul.
He said to me, are those bikes going spare? And I said, you can have them. There's four bikes out the front that I think my husband was trying to get rid of. So I let him have them. He was thrilled. I said, my husband's a bit of a hoarder. So, you know, there's always going to be stuff on the driveway. He said, so am I. Really excited. I am too. I'm a hoarder. I am.
Oh my God.
And he said, I'm going to take those bikes back. I'm going to tinker around with them. I'm going to fix them up. And I said, well, you know, always have a look. Do ask, though, because some of the things he does want. But I'm trying to keep the front driveway clear. He has other parts of the house that he can use as his hoarding space.
She made it awkward. She made it awkward.
How did I make it awkward?
Awkward, awkward.
How dare
she
you?
She made it awkward. She awkward, made it awkward.
Awkward.
She awkward. Awkward.
How
awkward.
Awkward.
How bloody awkward.
Awkward.
Awkward. Well, this is awkward. How bloody awkward.
You. Well, I was about to say, well, that ties in nicely to what we're talking about this week.
What's that, Michelle?
Hoarders.
Hoarders!
Yeah, look, I don't even know why I have some kind of fascination with this, but I do. And I think it stems from a horror moment in my childhood where my dad, who has passed away and I don't really talk about very often, but he had this bee in his bonnet that he wanted his kids to learn piano.
Oh.
And there was a piano teacher literally 2-minute walk away around the corner in the next street from us. And the Manns, they were called. So we went to the man's house to check out, you know, like just have a rundown on what the lessons would involve, blah, blah, blah. And hoarder house. Opened the door. It was literally this tiny sort of human width space in the corridor. Everything else was piled up with newspapers and just junk. You literally felt claustrophobic from the second you walked in. And, you know, Dad and Mum were talking to them about the lessons and we walked out of there and I was like, I don't want to go back there. It's horrible. I don't like it in there. And since then, you know, it's something that I've always remembered, like seeing that house. And I sort of have like a crazy fascination with it.
Well, it is fascinating, isn't it? The psychology behind it, because it's deep.
It is. And there's a lot of like murky truths out there about hoarding. And, you know, a lot of psychiatrists for many years, like the psychiatry industry, were lumping hoarders in with people with OCD.
OCD, yes, absolutely.
But it's not.
No, it's been recently, since I think 2013, recognised as its own disorder.
It is. And when you think about it, it absolutely makes sense because people with OCD, they take care of their possessions.
Yep.
They really are like very proud of it. Whereas hoarders, they get something and as soon as they have it and they've collected it and hoarded it, they're no longer are interested in that item. So I think that's a really key distinction in this kind of, I mean, let's call it a mental illness because I think it is.
Yeah, although my husband would disagree with that. He would also disagree with the fact that he is a hoarder. So try telling a hoarder that they are a hoarder. And also, it's interesting, Michelle, that your piano teacher, potential piano teacher, actually was doing piano lessons from a house like that. Number one, you'd think, how would they make money? You'd have little girls like you a little bit prissy about sitting there down and getting their white bloomers dirty on a little chair.
Oh my God, you're making me out to be princessy. I'm telling you, it was
no, I understand. I'm just joking.
Feeling you're such a little bitch.
I'm joking. But say, you know, people wouldn't want to go in there in the first place. And the other thing is, yeah, hoarders don't want people to look. They don't like people to come in and see what's going on. Because if you know a hoarder, if you're related to a hoarder, and you try and get them to tidy up, or let's get rid of some of this stuff, or try and fix it from the outsider's point of view, not the hoarder themselves' point of view, they will get really angry and upset because it's taking away their power. So that is the disorder itself, I think. So it's not just a word to describe messy people who like to collect clutter. It's actually, you know, like you said, an illness. And other people don't understand how it actually how it feels when you're the person collecting or hoarding.
No, well, I mean,
I mean,
believe it or not, I have been accused of being a hoarder. My home literally did not have one bit of clutter in it. I was shocked, mortified.
Well, I do remember going through your wardrobe once and having a bit of, you know, it was difficult for you to let go of some things. Do you remember?
Yes, but that's clothing. And I had the space for it, so why not just hang on to it until I don't need it anymore?
But we were doing it because you wanted to figure out what you could get rid of because you didn't need it anymore. You wanted to get some new stuff and change your style. But you wouldn't get rid of band t-shirts, and you wouldn't get rid of t-shirts that your boyfriend had given you. And as a stylist, personal stylist, I have experienced that so many times with clients.
Well, I think there is some kind of sentimentality that people have, attachments to things. And certainly I did, but when I literally lost everything I own in a fire.
Sure, that's cleansing.
Then that is, you have no choice. It is gone.
Yeah. But how did you feel? How did you feel after the initial shock had worn off?
I made a really conscious decision to be very zen about it, because I had thought to myself, there will be moments when I have anxiety. And in fact, it happened a few nights ago. I thought about a particular item and realized that's gone. That was in the fire. I'll never see that again.
You'll
and
get
I
that.
Had this moment. Yeah. And it's really random. I don't know what triggers these little moments of anxiety, but I would say 98% of the time I am really zen about it. And I just think it's stuff. I'm okay. It's gone. No amount of tears will bring any of that stuff back. And I just have to now buy things that I love and that I want and that make me happy, and just not worry about the things that have gone.
Yeah, that's so true.
Otherwise I'll be in tears, because there was some fucking good shit.
I know. I know you did.
Oh God.
But it's just things. You've got your life. But listen, many people have some belongings they consider special, and it's common to save things because they could come in useful in the future. When you're hoarding, the collecting and keeping of all these things, because there's so many of them, causes you distress and it affects your day-to-day life.
Yes. Well, this is the thing. Like, I did a little digging into why hoarders hang on to stuff. And on the surface of it, some people hoard because they believe that it will be, like you said, useful or valuable in the future. Or they feel it has sentimental value and it's really unique and irreplaceable. Or they got it at such a bargain that they can't bear to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
Also, some people save things and hoard things because, like you were just talking about with my wardrobe, it's a reminder of things that will jog their memory, and they think that without that they won't have the memory. They won't remember what it is that item signifies.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can't decide where something belongs. So they just keep it.
Yeah.
They just keep it. But the deeper reason really is hoarders don't want to make decisions. Weirdly, hoarding is actually associated with perfectionism, which at its root is tied to they don't want to make the wrong decision. So they make no decision.
Yeah. Indecisiveness is definitely an indicator of, oh, of hoarding. Do you remember we talked about Joyce Jeffries, who's the character that Chris Lilley plays in Lunatics, the much derided series that we loved? Now her character was fantastic and so complex, I thought. I know people thought that he was making fun of people with, you know, with issues, and she was one in particular. She was an ex-porn star, loved her dad, dropped out of society and became a collector of things. And she'd often be screaming at people, "What are you looking at?"
Yeah, but she had a good heart.
She had a great, And she had then eventually with her collection, she was encouraged to make a museum out of it. And her best friend Rhonda were walking around. They took an elderly couple on a tour. I just watched this on YouTube the other day. It was so funny. And they were loving it. The old couple were like, getting into it. Because Rhonda's like, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom in the background. And Joyce is going, "Here are my spoons. 1, 2, 3. The spoons we got from Scotland. Look at them. Look at them. Touch my spoons. These are the salad servers I got from the council collection. Yeah. Here's my Smurfs. Touch them. Touch them. Look at all my toothbrushes and my corks."
It was so funny.
She also, there's another clip of her saying, "Here's my video recorder, my television. I record all of the TV stations all of the time. I don't miss a single second of any television that's happening at any time." I mean, that is proper. God. That's really taking it all in, isn't it? Not missing a thing.
I mean, do you remember the episode of Toast?
Yes.
So Susan Random, she was a character in Toast. Yeah. Toast of London. So Susan Random was this journalist. She's meant to be the sexy journalist. And she actually turned out to be an alcoholic hoarder who had a beak collection.
Beaks.
Do you remember? She had a collection of beaks. And then she bonded with Jemima Gina, who was stalking Toast, who had followed him to Susan's Random's hoarder house, where Jemima Gina was then apprehended by police because she'd gone beyond the limits of her electronic tag.
I love the name.
I love that episode. And honestly, anybody who has not had the pleasure of watching Toast of London, I absolutely love it. One of my favourite things on television of all time.
It's great, isn't it? I love the names, and I wish that there was I thought of a great character today because I was trying to remember a man's name and I came up with Chris Packett. A bit like when you were talking about our old cat that we shared, Pina, the other day on our Instagram Live, Pina's face.
We did, yes. So for anyone who's interested, we are going to be doing an Instagram Live shortly, but we did a little test and weirdly people actually started joining the live, and we were talking about how my Facebook page for the cat that Geordie had given me many years ago, Pina, had got hacked by some woman called Natasha Ross. And I said, yes, and you know it, but you can still see that it's Pina's profile because it's still got Pina's face on it. And then one of our listeners who joined the live was like, "Penis face." So yes, anybody who's interested can check out Penis face. But other famous hoarders, I read Andy Warhol.
Really?
Really interesting. But only later in life. He turned out to be quite the hoarder. So it turns out he kept these time capsules, is what he called them.
Right. Bins, other people would call them.
And it was just random stuff. And he did this sort of during the last years of his life. And he died in 1987. And then when the executors of his estate went through everything.
Or executors, Michelle. It sounds like
what did I say?
Executors.
Did I say executors?
Yes, did.
Executors. That's what I meant to say. Oh, too much rum.
Already. A friend of mine the other day said to me that she was describing someone as very scatological. And I was like, what, obsessed with poo? She's like, what? No, I've heard other people use that and they work at the BBC. And I was like, well, they've got it wrong.
It means obsessed with shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor old Andy Warhol. When his executors. They found 600 or more of these
bins.
Time capsules.
Yeah.
But they were full of shit. Like they like inside were things like, unpaid bills, junk mail.
Oh, dear.
There was a leaky can of Campbell's soup. And... this is the weirdest bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. pizza boxes, but with pizza crusts inside.
Pizza crusts or just whole pizzas?
No, he'd nibbled on them, just left the crust. But these were very, very deliberate because he had labelled everything with what it was and dates.
Was it an art exhibition Look, in the making?
They say it was hoarding. So I don't know.
Okay.
But apparently in his journals, he had written that as he'd gotten older, he found it really hard to throw things away.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe as a creative or whatever, something flipped and he found it. He was hoarding.
Can I just say to any person out there who is thinking that way, who's not actually, you know, a hoarder with hoarding disorder, don't, because you're going to die and you're going to leave all that shit for someone else to pick up. And I say this to my husband all the time. If you die and leave me with that fucking garden full of shit.
Oh, God.
I'll be cranky. Have you heard about those really famous brothers, though, the Collier brothers? I mentioned it to you earlier.
Well, only when you mentioned it.
Well, I have heard podcasts about these guys before. I didn't do my story on them today, but I just wanted to quickly cover them because they are really famous from the 30s and the 40s. And Paddy brought it up because we were talking about hoarding. And he reminded me that there's a song by Declan O'Rourke, who's one of our favourite Irish folk singers. And it's on his Magpie's Eye album called Langley's House, we think it's called. And it's about the brothers Homer and Langley Collier in Fifth Avenue in New York City, but I think it was in Harlem. So maybe there's another Fifth Avenue. And now the property has been knocked down and there's a little thing called Pocket Park in its place. Mm-hmm. And they lived with their family in this home and their parents were first cousins and medical as well. Very medical.
Right.
I think one was a gynecologist and the other I can't remember. But they inherited the house when the parents died. They were both quite successful brothers as well. And there were rumors that there was gold and valuables in this house, and they got a lot of unwanted attention from neighbors trying to break in. So eventually they started boarding the place up. And then Langley, who was an engineer by trade, started putting out all these booby traps all around in case people got in. And his brother went blind. His older brother Homer went blind. They were living in nests within the house, which is obviously stories high. You can imagine it. They had a whole house. And then he became paralyzed from rheumatoid arthritis. And at this point, they weren't going out at all. And they were living in these little nests within, full of shit.
Yeah.
And he would... Langley would go out after midnight to try and scavenge food to look after his brother. He was his own main carer. And then one day, there was a rumor. Somebody called the cops. And they were always calling the cops on these guys. They thought that there was a strong stench of death coming from there. So the police came around. They had to break in somehow. It was really hard. Like, there was grills downstairs in the basement. There was things everywhere. They had to hack their way through. They found the older brother, Homer, the blind and paralyzed one, curled in a ball. He died from starvation and heart failure. His hair was down to past his shoulders. He was in a mess. But they couldn't find the other brother and they thought he must have legged it. So they looked everywhere. 10 days later, they found him in... one of his own, in a little tunnel built within his house. So one of his booby traps had got him and he's on his way through there to try and feed his brother.
No!
They lived like little rats, Michelle.
Oh my God.
I know.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
The full story can be found on many other podcasts, not this one, but it's just a little wrap up. Yeah.
Oh,
crazy.
Jesus. Well, did you ever watch Grey Gardens?
No.
Okay, so really famous documentary.
Yeah.
So
about the cousins of Jackie Onassis, weren't they?
Exactly. Yeah. So documentary from 1975. Yes, eccentric mother and daughter, Big Edie and Little Edie Bouvier.
Yeah.
And they, speaking of rats, they were living in a crumbling rat-infested mansion full of rubbish, full of actual garbage just everywhere. And loads of cats. And this was on Long Island. And the documentary is just incredible. Like, it is so fascinating. And I would recommend this to anybody who
I've got to check it out.
Yeah, it's become really iconic, this documentary. But, you know, in it, you just see the relationship between the mother and daughter. And they fight and they're singing old troll tunes together. And they wear glamorous but falling apart clothes and fur coats, and they squabble and they bicker, and I think it's Little Edie. She just will grab any old piece of whatever and like make a skirt. make a hat. You know, like they are pure, like total eccentrics.
I'd love and, to see this.
Yeah, and they were the cousins of Jackie Onassis. And the reason they ended up in this kind of squalid situation was because when Big Edie's husband left her, she's one of these like women that just doesn't know how to look after herself without a man.
Right.
And they had to rely on Black Jack, which was Jackie's father. And according to Little Edie in the documentary, the father of Jackie Onassis basically stole their fortune and gave it to his own daughters.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then left them to rot in Grey Gardens.
Oh my goodness.
And then when the mother and daughter, Big Edie and Little Edie, were facing eviction from it because they were contravening every kind of sanitary rule, Jackie stepped in and paid something like $35,000. And this is back in like the early 70s. So that was big moolah.
Yeah.
And to supposedly restore the mansion, but it wasn't restored. It was just basically hauled, like the garbage was hauled away.
Oh, Jesus.
But I wonder, you know, if there was something in that, if she knew that her dad had robbed them of their fortunes and that's why she felt some urge to help, or if she just didn't want her name being dragged in the mud. But
right. Yeah,
absolutely fascinating documentary. Really, really recommend it.
Shocking.
Yeah, really full on. But yeah, I mean, I think hoarding is such a weird, complex thing. And I looked up some stats on hoarding. And worldwide, they reckon 1.5% of people in the world are hoarders. That's a lot.
It's a lot. I had a stat somewhere as well. Where was my stat? Let's have a look. Hang on. In the United States, the International OCD Foundation says hoarding disorder affects up to 6% of the population. And that's 19 million Americans.
That's a lot. It's quite full on. And I actually did some stats on, I found some stats, which, yeah.
That's a stat.
But there was a study and it was looking mainly at animal hoarding. And I'm going to come back to this. Oh, yes. I am going to come back to animal hoarding. But it was carried out in Brazil in a small town.
Oh,
so
God,
it's a small.
I just thought what animal hoarding might be. Oh.
Yeah, I've got a case for you, just for you, Jordan.
Christ.
Yeah. And so it was in Brazil, in Porto Alegre. And they looked at 33 animal hoarders. And 75% of the 33 were low income, 88% weren't married, and 64% were elderly. And they say that these figures are consistent with generalized hoarding disorder.
Right.
So basically, low income, unmarried, elderly. So, and it mainly affects, animal hoarding mainly affects women. But general hoarding is equal men and women.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much 50-50. And like we had discussed, it was considered to be obsessive compulsive. But now, you know, they've realized that OCD medications don't work for hoarders. And
what medication does somebody on OCD take?
Things that will relieve their anxiety. But this isn't about anxiety.
No.
Hoarders, it's not about anxiety. Yeah. Mm. So that's why they've reclassified it. And but they also say that like anxiety and depression are often associated with hoarding.
Right.
Yeah. And obviously like attachment to inanimate objects. Hoarders have anxiety about decision making, but it's not OCD anxiety. So that's why that medication, I think, doesn't work. And they say that hoarding relieves anxiety, but it also generates it because the more the hoarders accumulate, the more kind of they insulated they feel from the world and everybody else. But the more they accumulate, of course, the more isolated they become.
Yes.
So it's like this double-edged sword.
They'll tend to keep people away because they don't want them coming and trying to clean up or trying to tell them that what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah. And they say that severe hoarding is most common in middle age. But hoarding tendencies often have like presented themselves in adolescence.
Hmm.
So,
and do they say that it can be something that's learned behavior from an adult, like from a child, adult to child?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have read that. I also read that many hoarders are also socially withdrawn or isolated, and they begin to hoard as a way to kind of find comfort because they've got their stuff. Their stuff becomes their friends and the things that make them feel good. And then I read this thing about hoarders' brains. They did this study at the mental health center at the Institute of Living in Connecticut. And because they recognize that this is a decision-making problem. Hoarding is a decision-making problem.
Yes. Yep.
And they did this kind of study where they gave these hoarders some junk mail and normal mail, but they'd had to bring it in to the study. So it was mail that had been delivered to them.
Yeah.
And then they were asked, can you, and then they gave them a pile of junk mail and mail that belonged to somebody else. And they said, what can you throw away from your pile of letters and junk mail? They couldn't throw anything away.
Wow.
But when it came to other people's mail, they could get rid of it all because it wasn't
theirs. Interesting. So it's something about ownership.
Yes. But interestingly, they wired up the brains, and when they...
They wired up the brains.
Well, they put all the
wires in their brains.
Well, they wired it up and they put all the sensors on and were recording the ECG and all the brain activity.
Yeah, yeah,
sorry.
Okay.
I didn't
now
even
I
make
understand.
That clear. It's like they just wired it up.
They just put a wire on my brain.
So what they found was that there was a spike in a particular part of the brain when it came to their having to deal with their mail.
Spike.
Yes, and I can find out what it is.
Was it dopamine or something, like one of those feel-good hormones?
They saw a spike in activity in the chemicals. Anterior cingulate cortex and the left insular cortex. And apparently there's a fold within the organ, the brain's surface wrinkle.
Oh, yuck,
and
Michelle.
I know, but it's really interesting. In people who aren't hoarders, there's no activity in a decision-making process like this. But with hoarders, there is a real lot of spike in activity in that part of the brain. So there is something more going on with the neurological issues. So I think there will be, and it's not in OCD people either, it says here, or people who are depressed. It's a very specific brain activity
for
hoarders.
So difficulty making decisions and... As a result of that, you've got the fold in the brain tissue that whenever you are collecting or hoarding, that gives a spike in something that makes you feel good, I guess.
You got it.
Just trying to break it down for the layman.
I know, because I was probably a little bit confused with what's in the brain. But then I kind of looked a little bit into what causes people to become a hoarder, because we talked about this. Some of it is learned, but they say that there are no set triggers for people becoming a hoarder, although there are risk factors. So one is not being able to make a decision, even just in small things. And you'll probably, I think if you can see this in children, just keep an eye on it, not trying to worry people, but, I remember I went through a small phase where I found it really hard to make decisions. Couldn't even choose between a Mars bar and a Snickers.
When you were a kid?
Yeah. And I was like... and then it's like, I just want the fucking Snickers. Who cares?
We swear a lot. We swear a lot.
So difficulty making decisions is definitely... can be a trigger.
Yeah.
Like you said, having a family member who's a hoarder... then it's sort of, you see it, you learn it, it becomes part of your experience.
And then that, I suppose that fold in the brain doesn't get exercised enough and then becomes flabby.
Yeah, and you're making, that you're creating those neural pathways.
Yeah.
So you're then reinforcing this behavior. And also when, it's like anything, if you see something and that's your experience, then you think it's normal. And then they also say that traumatic events can trigger hoarding. So death of a loved one, losing a parent when you're young, particularly. serious illness, car accidents, physical abuse, sexual abuse, or in later life, if you've been in the military and you've been PTSD. In combat, kind of, yeah, it can trigger hoarding. Mm. So lots of potential triggers. And I think I want to point out here that hoarding is different to collecting. So they're not the same thing, because collectors, and I know people who are collectors, and they have pride about their possessions. You know, they get such pleasure from buying it. They dust all their knickknacks and they
present
display
it.
Them. And yeah, they love talking
spoons,
about them.
Spoons, look at my spoons.
Smurfs. But, you know, and they really spend time like creating this collection that they're proud of. Whereas hoarders, like you said, they feel embarrassed mm-hmm. about their possessions. They feel uncomfortable when others like come to their home and have to see how they live, and they have clutter and they feel sad and ashamed, and they're often in, you know, they're not proud
makes
of what
sad.
They're doing. Yeah, so there is
I feel sad.
I know, there is a difference. Yeah, I do have some stories to tell.
Go on then.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm going to just say there's a trigger warning here.
Oh, shit, Michelle.
I know, because it involves animals. So, look, so I read about this woman called Terry. She's from Hanover in Illinois in America. And she was on the show Hoarders. And like I said about animal hoarding, she hoarded cats. And look, she said something like the reason she collected cats was because she felt like she was helping to save them. And apparently you hear this a lot with hoarders. They feel like they're saving those newspapers. They're saving that television, or they're saving these cats. You know, it's like they feel like they're doing a good deed. But, you know, she wasn't saving them, because she lived in a small house and she had more than 50 cats. And I saw the state of this place, and the floors and the kitchen benches, they were covered in cat shit. And when I say covered, what I mean is
layer upon layer.
Yeah. Like, think of like the floor of a chicken pen.
Yes.
How
layers.
It's like mud, but this isn't mud. It's just shit. It's feces. It's cat vomit. It's everything. And it's thick. It's thick, like fucking inches deep. You know, it's not just a little cat poo on a bench. It's fucking filthy. Anyway, this lady's house looked fucking terrifying. I mean, you could not see the floor. And what's worse was there were just sick animals crawling around everywhere.
No.
But this isn't the worst bit. And this
is... Michelle!
This is the trigger warning.
Ding, 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 ding. Trigger warning.
She hoarded dead cats in the fridge and the freezer.
What?
Yeah. So she had 50 live cats, but she had more than 100 dead ones.
Oh, God.
And she was, like I said, she was hoarding them in this fridge freezer.
What the
because,
fuck?
Yeah, because she was hoping, apparently, to, like, cremate
revive
them. But she, cryogenics. But she couldn't afford to cremate them. She didn't have enough money.
Shit.
So she just popped them in the fridge, and she was hoping to like have enough money to be able to give them all a proper cremation. And this is the real trigger warning. Because she had them in the fridge just wasn't up to the task. And when they were cleaning it, there were liquefied cats.
Oh, stop it.
Sorry. I'm sorry. That was that's the story of the hoarding cat
now,
lady.
Can I just say
tears.
To anybody listening who's very upset by that story and the fact that we cried
laughing.
With laughter. We're not laughing at the cat's plight. That's terrible. I'm horrified about that, but
dear.
Oh, that is fucking atrocious, Michelle. Thanks for that.
Appalling. So anyway, when I
please
was
no more stories about animals.
No, well, I do actually have one.
Of
but
course, you
when
do.
When I was looking up about this story, I was just Googling, and you know how you like on Google it has people also ask, and then you have questions in Google. Well, one of them was how many animals is considered hoarding?
Okay.
And so an answer came up, and this is a legal definition from Hawaii, and it said anything, if you possess more than 15 dogs or cats or a combination, and you cannot provide food for them and, you know, good living conditions, then that's considered hoarding.
Oh.
So if we're staying on the theme of animals, I just want to tell you about Ratman.
Oh, okay. He sounds like fun.
So 54-year-old Glenn Brittner, he was a businessman from LA.
Yeah.
And when his wife passed away, sort of as a coping mechanism, he started keeping rats as pets.
Are they the ones that he bought from the pet store, or they're the ones that he found in his basement? Okay, good.
No. He bought them. And it started off with three. He had one male and two females. And this was back in 2009.
Well, they're going to mate.
Well, they escaped from the cage.
Oh, okay.
And then they started burrowing into the walls of his house. And of course, like you said, they fucking bred like crazy.
Rats.
Yeah, bred like rats. And 2 years later, there were more than 2,500 rats.
Are you silly man?
In this house.
doesn't sound like he was hoarding them, though. It sounds like he made a very bad mistake.
Yes, but he didn't do anything to get rid of them. And he was he apparently said, yeah, I admit, I have too many rats.
I would hate even one would be too many for me.
Yeah, he wasn't really even sort of that bothered by them. But he had to start sleeping in his office because the rats had taken over the whole house. They were everywhere. It was the one room where there weren't too many, because when he was sleeping in his normal bedroom, they would start chewing on his hair because they needed stuff to make their little rat nests. So, yeah, it wasn't good. But anyway, the people from Hoarders stepped in, and then the Humane Society eventually removed 2,000 from his home.
What, removed or shot them?
Well, it says removed, but it could
smashed
have
them
been
with the back of a spade.
Drown them
bam,
in the river.
Bam, bam, bam.
Judy! Oh, my God.
I don't like rats.
No.
I mean, I love all living creatures, but not rats.
Yeah, rats aren't the best.
No.
But get this. They only took away 2,000, and of the other 500
they left
rats,
another 500.
Well, they were adopted or given away. Yes! Oh. Who's adopting a fucking rat? Anyway,
covered in lice.
Well, except for two. He kept two.
Okay.
His favourites that he named Commander Whitehead and Captain Brown Bottom.
What?
The weird thing is, when I was doing the research on this, turns out just a few years later in 2015, he was murdered in his house. Yeah. They found him. He had been tied. His wrists had been tied up with zip ties. And he was brutally murdered, and it still remains unsolved.
Wow.
I don't think it's connected
Captain Whitehead
to the rat.
Or Major Brown Bottom.
Captain Brown Bottom. No. So poor old rat man, he met a bad end.
Oh, my God. That's so sad.
Yeah. And then I'm just going to tell you one last story.
Oh, my God, Michelle.
So this is about Shanna, the poo hoarder. So her name's Shanna, by the way. I'm not mispronouncing. Her toilet broke. Mm. And in order not to clog up the broken toilet.
Should she poo in a bag? Because we've all done that.
We've all shat in a bag, haven't we? We've all done a nature. No, worse. Shanna decided she was going to shit and piss into oversized big water bottles. What? And she did this for 12 years. So this is a direct quote from her. My mother used to put poop in a jug. She's from America.
Okay. And that's a great accent.
It's actually not how she sounds, but she, not even joking, because I watched this.
Is this all from Hoarders, the TV show that you watched?
This one is from Hoarders, yes.
Okay.
And she is proud. She was proudly showing this shit bucket that had belonged to her mum. And it was kind of like nostalgic.
Yeah, but it's still full?
Well, it had all slop
with
on
ancient
it.
Shit?
Oh, yeah. God. She doesn't clean it. There's nowhere to clean it.
Oh,
and,
my God.
You know, and that's why she shits in buckets and
oh,
bloody.
No.
Yeah. So in 2012, when the cleaning staff from like the squad from Hoarders went in. Mm-hmm. And look, I have to say, Hoarders
give them
is
a medal.
Well, Hoarders is a, yeah, give them a medal, but it is amazing and terrifying and sad all at the same time. And look, even though I know hoarding is a form of mental illness, and so many of the cases are fucking hilarious because in so many of the cases, the hoarders are just really happy. They don't know they have a problem. And in some cases, they're even proud of their filth. You know, it is really... They're not like depressed and sad and lonely. They're like, yeah, come on in. And this woman, Shanna the Poo Hoarder, she is one of them. She doesn't realize she has a problem because back in 2012, when the hoarder's cleaners arrived at Shanna's house, she had no idea what her house looked like to other people. And because it was literally full of shit. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these big water bottles with lids on, piled up, full of shit all over the house. And she was like, yeah, you know, my house has a musty odor. And they're like, and they said, what do you think causes that? And she said, oh, well, it's dust and mold. And they're
what?
Like,
what about all the shit in the bottles?
They said,
love?
It's shit. And she's like, well, I can't smell anything. I don't think so.
Oh,
and then
man.
It honestly, it's the most intense hoarders I've ever seen. And
wow.
It was, like I said, even worse, there were like used tampons everywhere and buckets of shit. And she turns to the camera and she's like, come on, like, look at my place. Really, you can't call me a hoarder. Like, is this your definition of hoarding? And they're like, you're one of the worst cases. And she was
no.
The look on her face was, she was in shock.
Oh, poor
and
girl.
So she's in denial, but trigger warning.
Oh,
worst of all. I know, look at your face every time I say trigger warning. Trigger
ding,
warning.
Ding, 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 trigger warning.
Worst of all.
Another ditty.
Oh, God, I know. She proudly declares she's been eating poo for 12 years and that she gets high from it.
Oh, my.
She gets high from the fact that
God.
She knows she's going to eat shit. Now, look, during the episode, it shows how she, like, shits in this big bucket, and then when it's full, she empties it using bare hand and a cup and puts it into a smaller bucket, which she can then throw outside into like this cesspit, right?
Right.
And then she's like, my neighbors don't have a problem with it because they've never said anything. Yeah, they fucking do have a problem with it. And
oh my
she's,
God, I've got a problem with it.
Yeah. And she's happy and cheerful, and she's really oblivious and unconcerned about the way her house is. And then when the show presenters finally managed to get the message through to her that if you don't clean this up, you're getting evicted, kind of the penny drops.
And very, very sick. Why is she not sick from eating her own poo?
Well, get this, right? So she says, yeah, I know I have to change, but she's like, party ends tomorrow. And she's like, I will get the party started one last time because she
party
wants to eat her last bowl of food with shit in it. Literal shit in it. And she's there. She's like, yeah, the party's going to end tomorrow. I'm going to eat my food with shit in it. Like, she wants to eat it. And so she's like, she begs the show producers not to rob her of her last chance for her. And this is a direct quote, her last blaze of glory.
Michelle,
and she's
I feel
there,
like I'm in a dream right now. I'm having a dream and I'm going to wake up in a little while and I'll say, Michelle, did you tell me a weird story about somebody who ate their own poo?
Do you know what? And but the thing is, it's like this, you see her eating this bowl of soup and there's all shit all around the rim of the bowl and in the soup, and she's there loving it. And look, I have to say, for someone who literally eats her own shit, her skin was clearer than mine. She had this gorgeous looking glowing skin. Like, it's, I don't
peaks,
know.
Peaks and troughs, yes.
Yeah,
benefits.
Literally
benefits.
A trough. Literally a trough. But anyway, look, the episode had a happy ending because Shanna was given therapy and she...
And a new toothbrush.
And they put her in a new house, actually, and she started afresh. So
okay, good.
So Shanna had a happy ending. So
that's great.
There you go.
Oh, Michelle.
Sorry.
Thank you for those horrific tales. I can always count on you to go and do some research. That my story, in comparison, really doesn't touch the sides, quite literally. I was going to talk about the Honeycheck sisters. This is a couple of sisters from Detroit. Okay. And it's only from December 2018 that this happened.
Oh, okay.
Right, it's a real sad story, really, because it was Thanksgiving weekend and 80-year-old Sally Honeycheck, who for decades lived in a rundown Detroit neighborhood near the Polish Yacht Club. And I believe there were a Polish community.
Honeycheck, yeah, maybe. Honeycheck, yeah. Mm.
She wasn't answering the phone. Her cousin Linda Kajma, or Kaima, just call her Linda, went looking for her. Honeycheck, who was an avid Avon makeup collector, had her hair done weekly and she dressed up for church functions.
So she looked, she was a functioning member of society.
Yeah. She went to things, did things. And she was, there were sisters. So nearly seven decades, this is where the Honeycheck sisters lived quietly together. They would work on their garden and collect baseball memorabilia. So they were collectors. They'd purchase clothes, makeup and jewellery by the box load. So they were kind of like, let's have a little bit, you know, kind of stockpiling a little bit. So their parents had bought this pole town. This is the name of the area, this home in 1951, and raised their children there. And then the daughters never left after their parents died, much like the Collier brothers in the previous story that I told. The sisters stayed on, and somewhere along the way, something happened to them, unbeknownst to relatives or friends.
Okay.
Ended up just shutting the blinds to their house.
Oh.
Shut the doors.
Just
became reclusive. Ordered takeaway and had their groceries delivered. Okay. No family or friends ever set foot in the house. You know, they had previously, but from this point onwards, they kind of didn't. No one would enter the house, not even the delivery drivers.
Mm-hmm.
The sisters slowly slipped into an abyss of hoarding and squalor, which nobody noticed until it was too late. And from the outside, you'd never know. They had all these beautiful lilac bushes and the house was lovely and the lawn was mowed and the bushes were trimmed. So they must have had like a gardener, or maybe they did it themselves. I don't know. And when they left the house, the Honeycheck sisters were always beautifully turned out.
Right. So they put on a front.
It looks like it. Yeah. So the last time their cousin Linda had spoken to the Honeychecks was the first week of November 2018.
Okay.
So around Thanksgiving, which is the end of November, no one was answering the phone when Linda rang. She phoned through all the way through the holiday weekend and still no one's answering. So she got really worried and she rang the Detroit police the following Monday, and then she asked for a well-being check. What's so funny?
I just thought of the cat. I just... Sorry, keep going.
You're so sick.
Oh, God.
She said she knew something was wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And these sisters had a dog. Stop thinking about your cats, Michelle. There's a dog.
No.
And the police noted that the dog wasn't barking when they went round and knocked on the door. No one's answering. Blah, blah, blah. Linda told the police to break into the house, but the officer said a break-in wasn't warranted. They advised her to check the hospitals.
Okay.
The police advised Linda to check the hospitals.
Okay.
And then Linda also added that the police had learned that the sisters were recently hospitalised.
Oh, unbeknownst to the family, I guess.
Unbeknownst to the family, exactly. Uh-huh. So later that night, Linda found Sally Honeycheck's sister, Lorraine, at Detroit Receiving Hospital. And she was on a ventilator and had been there since suffering a stroke on the 10th of November.
Okay.
But Sally wasn't there.
Okay. Yeah. God, that's not nice.
No, not good. So Linda called the police back and said to them to meet her at the Honeycheck's house, because by this point, she's absolutely convinced that Sally must be in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So about 9 p.m. that night, the police met Linda outside the house and they knocked on the door, but there was still no answer. So she begged the police to break in and they refused, convincing Linda to file a missing persons report. And at this point, Linda's thinking, it's just taking so long, you know.
Yeah.
The poor old thing must be, you know, in the right state.
Couldn't she just break a window and get in? Like,
well,
herself?
This is what she ended up doing. Yeah. So the reluctance was because there was no sign of any foul play and there was no post in the box, and they'd spoken to the neighbours and it was all seemed fairly
fine.
Regular.
Yeah.
Yeah. So within 2 days of meeting the police at the house, Linda learned from the hospital staff that both sisters had been transported to the hospital.
Okay.
And it was Sally Honeycheck that called 911 when her sister suffered the stroke on November 10th. So she was sitting in a lawn chair in the kitchen when it happened.
All right.
But when the emergency crews arrived and saw the living conditions, they called for a second ambulance to get the other sister as well. So clearly they were hoarders.
Yeah. Oh, God.
According to Linda, hospital social workers were hoping to convince Sally Honeycheck not to return to the house. But Sally checked herself out of the hospital at 1 a.m. on November 12th, telling the hospital staff that she had to go and feed the dog.
Right. Okay.
And that's the last time anybody reported seeing her.
She's never been seen.
Well, on Thursday, November 29th, Linda said a detective called her and said that Sally Honeycheck wasn't really missing because she was of sound mind when she checked herself out of the hospital. So Linda, the cousin, is still trying to get a little bit of help here. The next day she called police and said, look, I'm going to break into that house and I'm telling you ahead of time so you don't arrest me for breaking and entering. But if you don't think there's anything wrong, I know there is. I'm going in. Yeah. So the next day she returned to the house with a friend who was a retired Detroit police officer.
Okay.
This is December the 1st now. Linda put on a hazmat suit.
Oh, Jesus.
Just in case of, you know, probably like on line of duty, keeping yourself, you know, forensically intact. She put on her hazmat suit and broke into the sister's home. Once inside, Linda was appalled at the sight before her.
Oh, God.
There was garbage a foot deep. The first room she entered was the kitchen, where she passed a lawn chair with what she thought was a Halloween prop adorning it. It was a puffy kind of corpse slumped over the chair, and it had no eyes, no mouth, no nose, just a bit of hair on a skull, basically, and bones sticking out from under a red sweater and plaid pants.
What was it?
Plaid trousers, let's just call it. Leg bones came out of each trouser leg, and on top of the skull was what she thought was a wig. She thought to herself, what the hell is wrong with them? And she was thinking that about her cousins. Like, what are they doing putting silly dummies around like that? That's weird. And the state of the house was really shocking. She kept moving through the house, finding the dog in the dining room, and then she went back outside. The police asked if Linda had seen Sally. She answered no, but they've got a Halloween decoration in the kitchen. And then by then the police had arrived. And it was the police friend that said, did you see Sally? And but then the police had arrived and they offered to go back in with Linda. And that's when everything went blurry for Linda. Because once in the kitchen, in front of that blue lawn chair with a puffy corpse doll, the police officer said, Linda, she's right here. The dog has been eating on her.
No! Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Poor Sally Honeycheck had died alone in the filth of her kitchen, sitting in a nylon blue lawn chair. And she was surrounded by garbage a foot deep, empty sardine cans, stacks of greeting cards, takeaway bags, burned out appliances, dirt stained walls. And she'd been eaten by her dog and rats.
No!
Yep. Oh, Captain Brown Bottom made an appearance.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't joke, but it's so sad. It's so sad.
So the other sister was still alive in the hospital at this point.
She's in the hospital, thank God,
Oh, my God.
In the next room was Honeycheck's deceased Rottweiler, Jack, another victim of the house that had no heat, rat-chewed mattresses, squid-like fungi growing out of the walls. Jesus. And dirt-crusted floorboards that sagged so much that Linda fell through the kitchen floor.
Oh, my God. And that's the thing. Like, how did they shower and look so presentable when they left the house when they probably couldn't even get to the bathroom?
Don't know.
It's wet fucking wipes. Terrifying. Oh, God.
The coroner revealed that Sally Honeycheck died of natural causes and found there was extensive post-mortem animal consumption of the body. Sorry. Trigger warning. Ding, 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 ding for the 15th time this episode. Linda believes her cousin died at least a week before the day her body was found. Oh. And the state of the Honeycheck's home was casebook hoarder disorder.
Oh, yeah, my God.
The beds couldn't be used for sleeping. The sofa and chairs could not be used for sitting. And the appliances didn't work. Oh. Boxes of clutter in every room filled with everything from greeting cards to unopened bags of clothing to Avon makeup, boxes, jewellery and sports memorabilia.
Blimey.
They hid their hoarding from the world so no one knew how bad it had become.
Yeah. Of course.
And if you stop visiting people, it gets worse.
Yeah, but they don't let you in. They don't let you in.
This poor woman, Linda, was left with the sole responsibility of handling the estate and all the affairs. Jesus. She had to clean the house, locate insurance policies.
God.
She had weeks and weeks of work to do. She sorted out a place for the other sister to live in a nursing home in Michigan. They had to have hazmat suits in 30 degree temperatures working week upon week.
And the filth, the rot.
They could only work for 20 minutes at a time because the stench was overpowering. Imagine those poor hoarder teams going in with the poo lady.
Oh, Jesus. No, it's just dust and mold.
But what they did find, as well as all this other shit, was hidden cash, $10 and $20 bills tucked everywhere and rat shit in the cupboards, beds, floor.
Right. So they were just finding, like, hoarded money in, like, everywhere.
Amongst the rat poo. Yeah.
Blimey. Fuck.
Yeah. So Linda believes her cousin's mental health deteriorated after she retired from her job in insurance about a decade before. Mm. She showed, there was a photo from 2003 that showed the house was clean and organized just as she'd remember it on her last visit. So there was a moment like when, maybe when there was no more, you know, work to do or no kind
yeah,
of
no
like
purpose.
Need to get out of the house. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if this is increased, the hoarding disorder has increased during lockdown.
That will be something that comes out in the future, I think, when we see the mental health effect of the pandemic on the population. Mm. You probably won't see it for another few years. It won't be revealed. But
yeah,
I think we're in for some nasty mental health surprises coming up.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There is help out there if you need it. If you think that you've got somebody who needs help, obviously, you know, don't just leave them to it because it gets worse.
It does get worse.
You know, check in with your local mental health authorities.
But then you've got people like Bob and Lizzie Gibbons. Two old
who?
Bob and Lizzie Gibbons. Two old age pensioners in their 70s from Herefordshire. They don't consider themselves hoarders, I'll let you be the judge, but they have 240 sex dolls. And they say they don't use them for sexual pleasure, they just like living with them. And they just sit the dolls down, they have a cup of tea with them, they eat dinner.
Oh my God.
They
do they clothe
out.
Them?
Yeah, I think so.
Thank God.
But Bob.
But look at those mouths.
Well, good for a cup of tea, I guess, and a jam roly poly, and but
yeah, the whole roll in.
Yeah, but you know what? It's weird because Bob Gibbons says he's never had sex with any of the dolls. Oh no, but they've spent more than £100,000
on these
dolls.
Bits of rubber. Oh.
Yeah, so I think I'm probably for the amount of money that they've spent, it's probably more collecting than hoarding. Okay. But okay. 240 of these.
Wow, and counting.
Yeah, my God. So, you know.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Oh, it's a wild, wild world out there.
It sure is, Michelle.
Well, that's it. That's all my stories.
Oh, thank God for that, Michelle, because I am quite shaken up by some of those tales.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about the cat story.
Never mind.
And I'll tag it. Please don't let your kids listen. Too late now. No,
little ears might not want to be listening to this episode. It wasn't too much swearing though, Michelle, as far as I could remember. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, you're fucking right.
So as usual, like, subscribe, share, go to the website, send us your stories.
Yeah, we want to
hear
from you.
You know what to do.
And if you want us to cover anything, let us know. And until then,
keep eavesdropping.
Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping.